Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have another exciting show planned for you today. Lynn Fredericks is my guest. She is the founder of Family Cook Productions and the author of a brand new cookbook called, or a new guidebook called, Get Your Family Eating Right. And she'll be on in a little while. But before she comes on, of course, I would like to share with you some of the important things going on in and around the city and some things going on in the news. So first, as many of you are aware, GMO labeling is an issue that is really, really hot right now. And we need to all make our voices heard. And coming up this week, we have two different opportunities to do that. On July 29th, you have an opportunity to meet with Senator Gillibrand in New York City with New Yorkers Against Fracking. And that will be from 1 to 3 at 783rd Avenue in New York. And you can find out more information about that on my website at www.iegreen.com. Also, the following day on July 30th, there is a big public hearing that will be taking place. The New York Assembly Committee on Consumer Affairs and Protection has decided to hold a hearing on Tuesday, July 30th, for GMO labeling bill A-3525, which is an opportunity to learn more about this issue. And it's being held at Lehman College campus in the Bronx. And you can also find out more information about that on my website. It starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. There have been invitations sent for people to speak, so it's not an open speaking opportunity, but there is an opportunity to send in information or to send in your views and thoughts up until August 5th, so you can get involved in that way. And I really recommend people doing that. GMO labeling is really important. It's something we all need to know, and we all have a right to know what is in our food. So please stand up and speak out for that. July 26th to the 28th, this weekend, there is a big 35th annual powwow taking place at the Queens County Farm Museum. The Queens County Farm Museum is a little gem here in Queens. It's one of the oldest farms in New York City. And this event has been going on for 35 years, and it's a huge Indian powwow. And so there's over 40 Indian nations that are represented. And there's lots of American Indian crafts being sold and foods. And it's only $10 to go, or $15 for the whole weekend. So I really recommend people going if you are around. It should be great. Also this weekend down in D.C. is a huge rally for independence from fossil fuels being sponsored by Food and Water Watch and 350.org, Sierra Club, and many other nonprofits. Workers are going to meet at 9:30. At St. Stephen's Church, and then walk a couple miles to Lafayette Park, where the rally will take place starting at 11:30. So if you can make it, that would be really great. I was planning on going and just aborted those plans this week. Last weekend, actually the weekend before, we were in Vermont, and that's a five-hour trip, and D.C. is a five-hour trip, and with the heat wave and everything, although it's very cool today, I decided I just didn't have it in me to go another 5 hours south and be out in the heat. So instead, I'm really excited. I'm going to take a weekend trip out east, which I have yet to do this summer, and visit some of the organic farms that are out there. KK's Farm in Southold, Garden of Eve's Farm. We also want to visit Greenpoint Brewery and Macari Vineyards. So we have a lot to do, and then we're going to end our evening at 18 Bay Restaurant, which is on Shelter Island, and it is a restaurant that was opened originally in Bayville, and the owners, Adam and Elizabeth, were our first chef members of Slow Food Huntington, and they moved their restaurant last year out to Shelter Island, and it's doing great out there. So I'm excited to go visit them. I haven't seen them since they moved, so that's where I'll be Saturday night. On the same evening, I was tempted to go to Slow Food East End is having a food riot dinner that same night, Saturday night, July 27th. The keynote speaker is what was really pulling me. That's Jeffrey Smith, who is the the author of the book Seeds of Deception, and he also is responsible for the wonderful documentary film Genetic Roulette. And he's just amazing. So if you can go to the Slow Food East End's Food Riot Dinner, you can find out information about that at Slow Food East End's website, or I also have it posted on my website, so you can check it out there. Also on July 27th, Slow Food New York City's book club is sponsoring Tom Acitelli, who is the author of a new book called The Audacity of Hops. And there will be beer tasting there as well from, I think it's the Brooklyn Brewery will be providing that, or no, Six Point Brewery will be providing beer for that. So that's taking place at the Book Court in Brooklyn. And that is what's going on. You know, as far as things that are going on in the news, it was very interesting in yesterday's New York Times, they were talking about large food companies hiring chefs to try to rework their snack foods and their fast foods in the lab and how they can trick people to think that there's more salt or more fat in something so they can try to redesign the recipes to be healthier. It'd be really interesting to see what comes out of that. I do not have much faith in that, I must say. A few other things I want to just say. I'm doing some cooking demos at some of the farmers markets that have been set up by Sustainable Long Island. These are youth farmers markets that they have strategically put in areas that do not have a lot of access to fresh produce. A few weeks ago, I was at the Roosevelt Farmers Market. Next weekend, I will be at the Shiloh Farmers Market in Wyandanch. That's August 3rd at 11 o'clock in Wyandanch. So if you want to come down to their farmers market, that would be wonderful. Love to see you there. On August 4th, there's a nutrition and wellness fair taking place in Hempstead that's being sponsored by the JCC and a bunch of other organizations. That's August 4th from 1 to 5 in Hempstead. And August 9th coming up is the third annual Grown on Long Island Day, which takes place at the Long Island Farm in Yaphank. And there's lots of local food and wine tastings, farm animals, wagon rides. It's a fun day. They have roasted corn, and I actually just got an email. They're looking to have a seafood throwdown, which is, you know, a competition in cooking seafood. So that should be really fun as well. And, of course, August 9th through the 11th is the NOFA, Northeast Organic Farming Association Summer Conference at UMass in Amherst. And that's always a wonderful, wonderful event. So those are going on as well. But some of the things that in the news, I know I've talked about the issue with the bee claps and all the problems that bees are having right now. And there has been a proposed bill called the Saving America's Pollinator Act of 2013. And there is a petition to sign to let your elected officials know that you support the banning of the neonicotinoids, which are the pesticides that have been linked to the downfall of the bees. And so if we can just suspend this pesticide, it's been outlawed in Europe or in the EU already, but our country has not done that yet. So if we can follow suit and at least put a ban on it for now while they finish doing all of their investigation to really see if that's the cause, that would be really great. And we need everybody's support. So there's a petition on my website that you can sign up for or sign on to and let your elected officials know how you feel about that. And then, of course, we're also waiting for the farm bill to move through the Senate again. The House sent their revision of the farm bill, which was horrible, to the Senate, and together they have to come up with a farm bill. And they only have 18 days left before the current farm bill expires, which is on September 30th. And if they don't come up with a bill by then, I think it reverts back to something from 1940. So we really want to see a fair farm bill passed. So let your representatives and senators know how you feel about that also. Okay, so now I'd like to share with you a recipe before I invite Lynn on to join us. And the recipe that I have this week is a vegetable jambalaya. And this is a recipe that is very adaptable to whatever you have at the farmer's market. Whatever is in season, you can add and then just, you know, keep with the spices so that it tastes like a jambalaya. And I developed this when we were screening the movie Soul Food Junkies at the Cinema Arts Center, and I wanted to have a vegetarian, healthy soul food meal there. So this is the recipe. You're going to start with 2 cups of organic short grain brown rice that you're going to cook according to the directions. And I usually put an organic gluten-free bouillon cube in the water when I'm making my brown rice just to give it a little extra flavor. You can also throw in some garlic cloves if you'd like, and a little salt. Okay, then you also need 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 1 small onion chopped, 4 cloves garlic chopped, 1 bell pepper chopped, 1 collard greens chopped, 1 bunch Swiss chard chopped, 2 carrots chopped, 2 teaspoons smoked paprika. And if you don't like a smoked flavor, you might want to cut that down to 1 teaspoon, but I was going for the smoked flavor. 1 tablespoon Creole spice or some emerald spice or Cajun spice, something like that. 1/2 cup of fresh or frozen corn, 2 cups of sugar snap peas, and again, that's what was in my garden at the time, so that's why I used it, 1 can fire-roasted tomatoes, 1 can cannelloni beans, 1 can black beans, 3 bay leaves, 2 tablespoons tamari, 1 tablespoon Worcestershire sauce, 2 teaspoons hot sauce, and then salt and pepper. And so while you're making the rice, you're going to start by sautéing some onions and carrots in the olive oil with the garlic for about 5 minutes. And when they get soft, you're going to add the other vegetables. Cook those up for a little while, then add the paprika, the Creole spice, the Worcestershire sauce, and the hot sauce. Then you can add the fire-roasted tomatoes and the beans and the bay leaf. Cover it and let it simmer for about 10 minutes till the vegetables get cooked and the flavors come together and the bay leaf has a chance to release its flavor into the sauce. And then you can add the rice to that and the tamari and mix it up. And if you want a little saltier, you can add a little more tamari or some more salt and pepper. And then feel free to adjust the spices to your taste. A little more smoky flavor, you can add more smoked paprika. A little spicier, you can add some more hot sauce. But play with the flavors to get it to be what is good for you and your family. And remember, when you are the chef, you get to be the boss and you get to pick how you would like the dish to be. And that's the beauty about cooking. You can adjust things. You don't want salt, leave the salt out. There's lots of different things that you can do when you are the chef, and that's why I encourage people to cook so much at home, and my guest today is also encouraging people to cook at home. And so please, as always, let me know. Give me some feedback. Send me an email at bhavani@ieatgreen.com and let me know how you like the recipe. But right now, I would like to invite on my guest, Lynn Fredericks. And as I said, she is the founder of the Family Cook Production and also the author of Get Your Family Eating Right and another book called Cooking Time is Family Time. And she's an award-winning pioneer in the field of obesity prevention and family nutrition. Lynn, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Welcome.
Thank you. You were making my mouth water with that jambalaya recipe, and I have to point out that we use a jambalaya recipe that's not vegetarian, but it's one of the most popular recipes in our Teen Battle Chef program. Can you imagine teenagers loving jambalaya most? So now I'm excited I have a version to offer the vegetarians in the group.
Yeah, well, you know, I so often, you know, one of the things that I love to do, and I'd say one of the things that's my specialty, is to take a traditional recipe and to rework it to become a vegetarian, to become gluten-free if it needs to be vegan if it needs to be. I have clients now that are gluten-free and now also soy-free. So, you know, so where I normally would do vegetarian vegan foods using tempeh, tofu, or seitan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really limited. Just I can't do seitan. I can't do the soy.
Right.
So it's really just beans.
But it sounds really delicious.
I'm adding beans to everything, and it's just wonderful. But, you know, beans are a great source of protein, of course, and when you combine them with rice, it becomes a complete protein. So that's really, you know, great. And, you know, kids like a lot of full flavors. And so...
So parents don't realize, right?
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I love about your book. I was just, you know, shuffling through it and looking through it, and it's really, you know, I love also how you put the chapters down on the calendar, that it's really day one, day two, day three, and you really can work your way through the book and, you know, and not get overwhelmed that way, just like one task a day.
It might seem a little bit odd, the sequencing, right? But because we don't tell you to really focus on your own cooking, you know, till a little later on. But really that mind shift and that taking on the value of prioritizing family meal and finding ways to make that pleasurable for the person who's in charge is very key. Otherwise, everything just seems too difficult, and we're not going to enjoy the process.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I also noticed, in the pictures, you have many of the kids, not all, but many of the kids are wearing little aprons. And I really want to recommend that to our listeners, because I think when you get a little outfit for your kids to work in the kitchen with you, it makes them think it's serious, you know, and it's, you know, they're getting prepared. And so in addition to washing your hands, you put on your little apron or chef hat to keep the hair out of the food. And it's just, you know, it really becomes a mindset. And it's great to, you know, set that up in that way.
Well, you know, cooking is one of the few things that we can offer children to or invite their participation in. That's part of the adult world that doesn't have to be dangerous, right? That can be appropriate for them. So if we, you know, we have a lot of guidance in the book of how to keep cooking engaging and challenging for all age children, but also safe. But when you're not distracted. If you have that information, you're not distracted by, you know, is this okay for my child to do? Really, children step up by being so, you know, trusted by their parents to perform tasks that have to do with getting the meal on the table for the family. And I've seen over and over again that children are really able to step up and take it seriously. They don't fool around because they feel really proud they're being invited into this adult world.
Absolutely. If you think about, you know, historically, children used to really, you know, people used to have a lot of kids so that they would have help.
Right, weren't they churning the butter?
Right. You know, kids, you know, were on the farm and they would help take care of their siblings and they would help go out and take care of the farm animals and they would help in the garden and they, you know, they helped the family work.
Exactly.
They were an integral part of the family, and it wouldn't work without them. And that's a wonderful feeling to give kids, to let them know that they're needed and that they're a part of it. It's not only about parents waiting on kids hands and foot, you know, and being their chauffeurs and their chefs. It's about...
Precisely. It was key for me to... it's how this all started was, you know, this book and all of the work in my organization.
That was my next question. Go ahead.
How to start, right? It all came from my own journey with my children. I ended up raising them alone, which was not the plan, but it's what happened in my life. And I was really searching for a way to connect us as a family unit when their father was now 70 miles away and just things were not, you know, ideal. And I didn't want to be this mother that was feeling like the slave because I knew then I would not be a very cool mom. I would be a really exhausted and cranky mom, and that wasn't what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted to enjoy having my children, so I was looking for some way to connect us on a daily basis that was, you know, went beyond, you know, pick up your socks and all those tasks that have to get done. So the mealtime became the place, and it was a little bit accidental, but once I saw how well my youngest son at the time, he was in barely two, could engage in very simple things, you know, snap the beans, take the leaves off the stems of the basil, I got really excited about, you know, having them both there, and that changed everything. It really healed. That cooking together really healed us from my divorce and created a sense of teamwork that persists to this day, and they're now 28 and almost 22.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. It's amazing. It's like when you just said, you know, picking the leaves off the basil. I mean, that's one of the things that when I'm washing a big bunch of basil, it's like I move so fast in the kitchen that it's hard to slow down enough to pick the leaves off the basil, you know? So it's a perfect, perfect task for you to give to a child, because this, it's simple for them, and it's rhythmic, and they can just do it.
Well, what's ironic, I think, is that so many parents, this is really ironic, I think, so many parents fear spending time in the kitchen because things take long and they feel like, you know, they're not excited about the repetitive tasks, and they don't realize that their little sous chefs in the house are, that's a, developmentally appropriate for them to do repetitive tasks. So
right.
If you divide up the kitchen work so that they're doing the things that are certainly, you know, appropriate age-wise, but more repetitive for the children, and then you're doing the other things, you know, dinner actually happens faster. People worry it's going to take too long. It doesn't have to.
Right. And, you know, it also is a antidote to the other option, which is parents who plop their kids in front of a TV so that they can have some freedom to go into the kitchen and not be disturbed. And, you know, that's certainly not something we want to do. And, you know, as a Waldorf teacher, you know, in studying child development, you realize that, you know, the first 5 years, those kids are learning by example. What they see done is what they learn.
They're literally a sponge, right?
Yeah. And so if they see you in the kitchen cooking and they're in the kitchen cooking, that's the role model. That's what's going to really embed in their being. And it's just a wonderful gift that you're giving them by doing that.
It is. There's so much that is sensory that goes on in the kitchen that sticks in their memory. So if they're walking by the kitchen and smelling, they're hearing the rhythmic sounds of something chopping, of the water running. All of those things make an impression over time, and, you know, of a sense of busyness and action, and that results in something pleasurable to eat. And people don't, I think too often in our society now, none of that reality of, you know, sensory inputs to our young children are even considered when they're mundane. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
People are very much worried about them, but worried about what they're watching on TV and all this kind of thing. But there are many mundane things that go on. What we have to pay attention to, what is the quality of those, and anything that relates to that children are exposed to that's very mundane, but that relates to preparing healthy meals is an education in and of itself when they're under 5 years old, even if they're not doing it themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're learning that this is something the family values, and it's very,
right,
very
just
critical.
Just by watching, uh-huh. So what, when did you actually start Family Cook Productions, and can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So Family Cook started after my exploration with my children, and I realized that they, you know, that this was not something that was just for me. This was something I wanted to share with lots of other people, because I realized that you didn't have to be a single parent to benefit by having a mealtime that was not about the kids in the watching the TV, that was a celebratory time together. So that was like 18 years ago, and in the last 14 years, I've been fortunate to have a partner in Family Cook, Mercedes Sanchez, who's the dietitian for Family Cook and the my co-author of Get Your Family Eating Right, because we really, really discovered that we share the very same values. She has all the nutritional knowledge. I had all the culinary knowledge together. You know, we've shared a lot of that knowledge. We don't really know where one head's, you know, leaves and another one's starts, because our brains kind of seem to have fused when we're writing and working these days. But we've developed so many different curricula, and you know, it's resulted in, you know, evidence-based curricula for pre-K through 12 that teach nutrition through cooking that are available nationally because we make it a train-the-trainer model. So instead of us, many organizations have sprouted up all over the country doing fabulous work in schools teaching cooking and providing programs for cooking. But, you know, they will come into your school, and sometimes, you know, there's a waiting list or whatever. For our programs, anybody can participate because it's just a matter of a getting trained and a small license, and it's, you know, not expensive, but it's, you know, available far and wide. So we're very proud of that.
Can you explain that a little more? Do you go into the schools to train people, or people come to you
people
to train?
People come to us. Sometimes if it's a...
Where are you located?
We're in New York City, but mm-hmm. we work with people all over the United States. So if there's a group, like recently there was a nonprofit in the Waccama Valley of Washington State, and they had a grant and wanted four of their after-school sites to be able to benefit from our elementary program, Look Who's Cooking, and our high school program, Teen Battle Chef. And so we went out there and trained, you know, 30-odd educators in these different programs over the course of a couple days. What's really exciting now is we have a distance learning capability. So in some of the programs, right now the distance learning has changed the training from 2 days, 2 or 3 days, to 1 day. And we're working on soon where we may be able to have the entire training be distance learning, but it's really reduced the cost. But we have regular training scheduled here in New York. People can find out from our website. And, you know, as I said, the distance learning is helping making the whole, you know, cost of that much less. The cost itself is only $450 to be trained, but if you are coming from another place, so, of course, there'll be some travel.
That's wonderful, because you're right. We need more people that can go out and spread the word.
And we find that if you embed the, you know, if people are part of an organization like ours and they're going out and they have a lot of expertise and they're going out into the community, that's not a bad thing. But sometimes there's the impression for the community on the receiving end, there's an impression of a barrier because, oh, that person has this education or that person knows more. Of course, they're teaching me, but of course they can do it. Where if you were, as we do, when we're training people that are in the hoods, you know, to have this embedding, this capability for the education in the communities of need themselves, it, you know, then the person who's teaching it looks just like me, right? And they've learned this, and so I can too. So I feel like it really is, it's a faster track for people to embrace.
Mm-hmm. And then how did this book and your other book come out of the Family Cook Production?
Well, it was it was my own family that started Family Cook Productions that then led to me writing Cooking Time is Family Time, which is really more my personal story. And then 10 years later, Get Your Family Eating Right is really so many more years, right, 10 or 12 more years of us, Mercedes and I, working together and really being so clear and certain about the things that work because we'd worked with over 100,000 families at this point. So when you consider that many people that we've had, you know, along the way, you know, we have such field-tested and really accurate sense of what is going to work for anybody. So now we have had the fantastic opportunity to put this in a book that we can share with everybody. So, you know, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't want to have your children in our classes or have our programs in your child's school, but it means that you can take that wisdom now and have it at home and share it with your family and, you know, have tactics that are really going to work and that are not intimidating. And you saw the food. We don't believe in kid food. Do you believe that now by looking at my book?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There is only food, right?
Right.
Of course you can.
I know,
make
it always
fun.
Makes me crazy, you know, in restaurants when they have the children's menu. It's like, why not have just
smaller
portions,
right?
Yes. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I know,
I'm with you on that.
We're very excited that when so many families with skepticism try our recipes with their children, they have the exact opposite of what they expect. They expect their children to turn their noses to, I don't want to eat that. But these recipes are very inviting. They're very flavorful. And when children have a hand in preparing them, they're curious and they're very celebratory and colorful and festive.
Well, you know what? The last word you just said, colorful, is really what pops out to me, and it's what is so, so important. And I think parents don't put enough emphasis on how it looks. And if you think about the marketing that food companies do to kids, it's all about color and how it looks, whether it's the shape that's fun or the artificial coloring that's fun or whatever. And there's nothing in food that is more colorful than fruits and vegetables. You know?
Exactly. And those kinds of tactics that you're mentioning, we actually break those tactics down that food marketers use, and we put a twist on it, and we tell you how to use the tactics and market your own healthy food in your house to your children.
Uh-huh.
It really works.
Share a couple, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, how about, I mean, I did this with my children for years, and if they come in the house and they don't see it, they get upset. I make sure that's that idea of accessibility. You can just reach and you'll get it. So I have multiple bowls of fruit in the house. And sometimes, you know, in the summer, cherry tomatoes. It doesn't have to be snap peas. That when you're hungry and you come in, instead of looking for some kind of junk food or some snack thing, you reach in and you get a cherry tomato. You reach in and you get a plum. You reach in. And I have a lot of it in the house. And it doesn't go bad because they're eating it. I mean, I have two boys, when they were teenagers, they were double dip, you know, two hands. One hand would swoop for a pear, the other hand would swoop for the peach, and honestly, they were like eating them both at the same time. I mean, we was going through the fruit like crazy. And it was a little expensive, but you know, I decided, you know, this was what I was needing them. This is what I believed was better for their health than maybe the cost of that was even going to mean there wasn't an extra, some kind of class or extracurricular activity. But honestly, I think it was a better investment. You know that my children were rarely on any type of antibiotic when they were growing up.
I was going to say, you feed them, you spend the money in good food, and then you don't spend the money at the doctor's office.
Oh, honestly, they were the healthiest kids and are to this day. So, it starts with our mind and a mind shift in values and priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, in the case of being able to provide guidance, we have step by step by step these little things that you can do, and then they add up. And, you know, they're just not insurmountable.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about fruit, do you, you know, I didn't get a chance to really notice if in the book you really talk at all about organic or the pesticides, and you know, it's like when I think fruit, you know, I think of all the things that are on the dirty dozen list, you know,
yes,
that you don't want to eat unless they're organic.
We actually provide the website so you can find that out, you know, for those.
Yeah.
You know, so we talk about the importance. Basically, glad you brought that up because I don't always have a chance to explain our philosophy about the shopping part, because shopping can make you insane, right?
Yeah.
So we tell people they should focus on quality, and that if you're going to buy into our idea of making meal concepts that are more on the one-pot variety and have more tradition behind them, so if you are a meat-eating family, you're using, you know, less meat, so you're reducing your carbon footprint, and you're also reducing some of the cost, right, because meat is very expensive as well. So what we find is that people will have more available budget for higher quality produce, particularly then they can prioritize the ones that are on the list, right, the ones that are more concerning from a pesticide standpoint, and be able to prioritize, those fruits and vegetables organically where it's more advisable to do so, but have the budget because you've cut out some of your, expense in the meat because you're using more whole grains and legumes. So,
right. And also, if you're buying things more in season, when they're plentiful,
yes,
they're less
exactly
expensive.
So we lay out all those shopping. So that chapter is called Savvy Seasonal Shopping, and I think we are pretty successful in helping people understand what the trade-offs are so that they can make the decisions themselves, but at least they can see where the savings are, and they can also see from a quality and a health perspective, you know, what their options are.
Right. You know, like I'm going out east this weekend, I'm going to have a cooler with me with ice so that, you know, if I'm out there, you know, I can bring back a whole basket of blueberries and strawberries
Absolutely.
That are fresh, and that I can, you know, put some in the freezer and have them in the winter when I want to make a pie or something, and they're, you know, they're organic, and I knew I froze them, and I know
yes.
I date everything before I put it in the freezer, and, you know, you lay it out flat so that they don't get crushed to be frozen, and then, you know, they're good to go. And so, you know, those kind of thinking ahead tools really are helpful.
Which is what always was in the past when we didn't have companies trying to think for us, right?
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the biggest struggle for parents when it comes to providing healthy food in the home?
Well, I think the biggest struggle is that we don't have a society that supports family cooked meals at home. And I think so many families are challenged by the expectation that their work is going to cut into the meal time, that their kids have to be involved in so many events, and so many of that is cutting into the dinner time. They struggle because they don't have the cultural support. You know, I was just, you know, my co-author Mercedes, she actually lives in France now, and I was just working with her there, and you know, everything stops at the mealtime, you know, and it's not just Europe, you know, places like Japan, they really value the meals. Everything stops, people have their meals, and they go on, and maybe certain things go on further into the evening or not. But, and then they also have national dishes that are inherently health-supporting. I don't think our American national dishes are as necessarily health-supporting.
Hot dogs?
Well, what I'm trying to say is that most national dishes in other countries are more of a one-pot kind of a dish. They're an amalgam of things, and they employ all the food groups, right? We could go on and on, jambalaya being something, but being a good one, but jambalaya is more of a regional dish. But if you think of something that's sort of quintessential American, whether it's mac and cheese or hot dogs or hamburgers, unfortunately, it's not a full meal, right? Mac and cheese
right.
sometimes will be eaten as a full meal, but it's not. It's,
right.
you know, it's where are those vegetables? Where's, you know, a protein source beyond some of the cheese? And, of course, some of the cheese is not very high quality. You know, same thing with the hamburger. Were we really saying with the hamburger that the pickle and the ketchup are vegetables? I hope not.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's, and, you know, maybe there's a tomato slice on there, but and then a slight piece of lettuce, but it's not really a healthy meal. So we have a hard time in this in our culture, and I think that makes it really difficult for parents. And so, you know, that they get very seduced by all the products that are out there
right.
that are, you know, begging them to not have to stress about what they're going to cook because
just
product
buy
is
this.
Here for them.
Right, right.
We're here.
Lynn, let's take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I would love you to share some of those tips that you can give to parents as to how they can compete with the marketing that their kids are receiving all the time. So, everyone, you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. My guest is Lynn Fredericks from Family Cook Productions, and we will be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Lynn Fredericks, the founder of Family Cook Productions and author of a brand new book called Get Your Family Eating Right. And it's a wonderful book, and Lynn is here with me, and we're discussing food marketing and how you can use those tools that the food marketing companies use to entice your kids to eat the food that we want them to eat. So, Lynn, you with me?
Yes.
Great. So, you know, I'm looking at the chapter that you have in your book called Understanding Food Marketing Deception.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing that I have found very helpful when I'm talking to parents, actually, is, you know, sometimes they're not so keen on wanting to make the change. They know they should, but they're not so keen on it. But when you show them how they've been manipulated and they've been pawns to the big marketing companies, they start getting angry. And that anger sometimes helps fuel the desire to become more empowered. And, you know, that's, you know, I think a really good tool for us to, you know, help adults understand how they're being manipulated. But for kids, you have to do it a little different. So,
I mean, culturally, it feels very subtle. I mean, certain things are very blatant, but there are a lot of other subtle things. And I think when they recognize that, you know, those tactics are all about, you know, the bottom lines of some corporations, you know, inherently, we want our economy to thrive. We're not against, I'm sure it's all of us as Americans, you know, we're not wanting corporations to not do well, but we do want corporations to have some responsibility, take responsibility and be honest with us with the healthfulness of the food that we're, I don't think it's a society, do we really want most of the food or much of the food that is sold in packages to be unhealthful? I mean, that just doesn't make sense, right?
right. Yeah, and most of them, I mean, I don't even want to get into the whole GMO thing, but
right.
most of the packages nowadays also contain genetically modified ingredients, and people have no idea about that. That's
right.
Why, I don't know if you heard at the beginning of my show, I was talking
yes.
about, you know, the labeling laws and, you know, opportunities
really
to speak up. Yeah. So what are some of the tactics that you recommend parents use to reverse the food marketing, or use the same tools that the food marketers use to get your kids to eat healthy food?
Some of the things that they focus on are attractiveness, bribery, promising the world, you know, access to fun, how they, you know, the vocabulary that's used to sell things, health claims, then the familiarity, accessibility, reachability. I talked about that when I mentioned that, you know, it's right there and you want to reach it. So I played that game with my children and just had all the healthy foods I wanted to have around them. So some of them, some examples I could give would be this whole idea of, you know, making, you know, like you said, those packages are so attractive with the colors. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're not only your food is really colorful, but you're setting a table that looks colorful. It doesn't have to be about how much you spend to do it, right? And some of the colorful elements on the table could be placemats that your children have drawn. But, you know, get them involved in it, but make it really festive and fun. And, you know, if your children, you know, superheroes seem to work a lot for children's, association with, you know, foods for the marketers. So, you know, put a superhero on the table now and then to, you know, guard their favorite healthy foods, or put it in the lunchbox, you know, to watch out for, you know, any bugs that might invade, whatever, you know, you need to do. But, you know, just, you know, meet children where they are, and that colorful mm-hmm. attractiveness piece is really important. Also, you know, this whole idea of, you know, when you go into a McDonald's or one of these places, there's music, there's access to, you know, a playroom or whatever. Make sure that when your children are doing the fun things that they enjoy, that there's food that you feel is healthy, but that they will like, and that they'll start to make the association between, you know, when they go on a picnic with mom, look at all this great food that we have, or if we go to the playground, mom has a picnic for us with all this great food, and they won't really care that the food is not in the package. They'll just care that, you know, it's part of going to the playground, and mm-hmm. and it's something that they like.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you start to build these associations, just like the marketers do.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, I used to send nori rolls with my kids for lunch all the time. And, you know, I'd make the inside really colorful.
Yeah,
so it would look really
so beautiful.
Beautiful,
right?
And when my oldest one is 33 and my youngest is 23, the difference in 10 years of popularity of sushi is amazing.
Yeah.
For the first one, people would like look at her going, ew, what is that? So many kids didn't even know what it was. By the younger one, I had to send at least two extra rolls so she could share it with everyone. So she had enough for a meal.
Oh,
otherwise,
and that brings up what parents don't even realize happened in school, right? They send beautiful food with their children. The parents that will bother to make beautiful food like you did with for their children to go to school, then there's a swapping that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe your children were too excited with their nori rolls to they shared some, but they didn't swap. But, you know, sometimes children will swap the healthy food that their parents put in their lunch, and, you know, so that they can get, you know, God knows what Lunchables
mm-hmm.
from somebody else.
Well, another thing, I mean, Lunchables is one example. I mean, if you look at, you know, there's all these little packages and little things that kids put together and they build their thing. Well, that's something you can do also, you know, send components so that your kids kind of build their own salad, you know, so you put the peas in one bag and they put it on, you put the peppers in another bag, you know, so that they are participating in creating it. And also dips. Do you find kids love dips?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, my kids used to, you know, when I would let them have a French fry, it was really just a vehicle for the ketchup. So, you know, making dips, you know, so if you send, you know, celery sticks and carrot sticks, you know, they package them all with these ranch dressings, which are not very healthy. But if you make
a really great hummus
or a yogurt dip or something that's really a peanut sauce, you know, something that's really, although peanut-free now, you can't send peanut sauce to school. So it depends on your school. But you make, you know, a tahini dip, you know, all different great sauces that the kids can dip into with little packages with the lids that they have to put on. All that stuff participates in making it a fun experience for them, I think, and can be helpful.
Absolutely.
So earlier you were talking about your curriculums that you've set up for schools, and you have, you separated into three different ones, I believe, right?
Yes.
Nibble and Willow for preschool.
Yes.
Look Who's Cooking
for elementary.
Mm-hmm. Elementary, and then Teen Battle Chef. Can you tell us a little bit about the different curriculums that you have?
Yes. Well, I'm going to start with Teen Battle Chef right now because that is probably one of our most robust and fastest growing programs. I developed it about 10 years ago to inspire teenagers to find their path to, you know, healthier food and, you know, not buy into the stereotype of what people even expect them to be willing to eat at their age and all the junk food, right, and all the sodas. And mm-hmm. through our, you know, really innovative formula of employing time limits because they do battles every week of, you know, like recipe presentations like Rachel Ray, but they do it in teams of six kids. And these weekly competitions, they develop a preference to prepare their own snacks and meals using fresh ingredients. I know it sounds crazy, like, why would that happen? But it does. And when we see this transformation, we took the program to the next level because we realized that they have the capacity then to influence their family and friends. So now the scope of the program includes internships and job opportunities for these kids to teach others in the community. So we start them out in the beginning of the semester, you know, random students who may not know anything about the difference between, you know, food groups or what's healthy for them. They may know that an apple is healthier than Fritos, but, you know, much more than that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And within 8 weeks, they become a Teen Battle Chef. They've gone through these series of competitions weekly, making different ethnic recipes like jambalaya, like risotto, like
Thai. They follow a recipe?
They follow a recipe. They learn the basic skills. They learn food safety, and they learn the basic knife skills and all of that. And then they have to follow the recipes that are prescribed in these different cultures each week that includes information about the nutrition and includes information about the ethnicity of the recipe. And they have to put on a full-on cooking demonstration. They only have a half an hour to do the prep. They have 10 minutes to do the presentation practice, and then they have 10, 15, 20 minutes to do a recipe demonstration as a group. This is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
So when they have to do that, you know, they have that challenge of doing that every week, and there's two of them going on each week, so each team presents to the other team.
And so each team, are they making the same thing and seeing which comes out better or no?
No, so they're making something different, so they come away each week with two recipes that they've learned how to make through these presentations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so intense because, you know, we're not talking childish type of recipes, right? We're talking recipes with lots of ingredients, certain techniques like risotto, whatever, you know, balancing the flavors in a Thai soup, you know, not for the faint-hearted. Lots of new things like fish sauce that they've never experienced. And they become Teen Battle Chefs after 8 weeks. At that point, then they can choose a leadership with their instructor, a leadership path. They can be special event headliners and do special events in the community or in their school. They can do become culinary coaches and teach other children cooking, or you know, children in a different school or younger than them in their school, or they can become school food ambassadors and work with the school food to engage their peers to be vocal and more open to trying new things, so that mm-hmm. sort of they're in that ambassadorial role.
So, and where does the school incorporate this in the curriculum? Is it an after-school program?
Some of them do it in arts, and often in arts and electives, and then in school time it'll be either in the arts or the electives, and then after school is very popular as well. But with this program is now in 100 schools around the United States in 20 different states, and more than half of the schools are. Are schools that are they're part of a group called Health Corps, and Health Corps is one of our fantastic partners that license our program in all of their schools. And that means if they're a Health Corps school, it means it's an average public school that happens to have Health Corps in their school, just like you might have the Peace Corps,
mm-hmm.
in your country. Well, they have Health Corps in their school. The program was founded, Health Corps was founded by Dr. Oz, and we've been partnering now for 4 years. And they have a fantastic curriculum, which, of course, now includes Teen Battle Chef. And by working with them, we're able to do so much more because of the size of the number of schools that they have. So if I want to do research, for instance, I can talk to one organization and have pull off research on Teen Battle Chef in 15 different New York City schools that are Health Corps schools. So I can tell you that the research results we've had this year have been amazing. We've seen just from 15 schools in New York City, out of 100 schools we've done research on this year, right? February to June, we surveyed and did other types of data collection of these students, and we found that they had increased their eating of new vegetables, lessened their drinking of soda and sugary drinks, increased their physical activity, increased their comfort in public speaking and in taking the lead in an event, and they also reported they were more comfortable to talk about the importance of shopping for local food just in that short period of time. And then we were able, in the same research, we were able to find that 89% of the students made positive changes in their own eating habits, and 59% of them positively affected the eating habits of their family, and 59% of them of the positive eating habits of their friends. Is that crazy?
Wow, that's excellent.
So we're so excited to have these impact results now, and we've been tracking the progress of the program for quite a long time, but this latest research, only supports our efforts to, use the kids as change agents, because honestly, in our society, do we really think of high school students as the go-to people of how to have a healthy lifestyle? Probably
mm-hmm.
not.
So we're almost out of time, but I would love you to share with my listeners, how can people get your program into their school if they'd like to get involved?
They should go to our website, www.familycookproductions.com, and go to programs and training, and they can see when the next training's coming up or inquire to us if there doesn't seem to be a training scheduled for the particular program that they want, and we will, hook them up with the training and make it possible for them to have our program. And if they're also interested in getting involved as volunteers, there's a volunteer section on our website if they're local here, although they can be volunteering in the programs around the country. And we also have upcoming events. Well, they can see Willow, our bunny puppet for the preschoolers, in action, or these Teen Battle Chefs are doing all kinds of things in the local area right now. You can even, oh my God, Bhavani, you're going to be in Shelter Island on Saturday. You can see the Teen Battle Chefs at the Sylvester Manor's CSA pickup. There's a Teen Battle Chef interning there making amazing food.
Really?
You have to go check it out.
Okay. I was going to go see Sylvester Manor, so I will. Okay.
She'll be there
great.
Early in the morning, though.
Early in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay. On Shelter Island. Perfect.
So you can find where Teen Battle Chefs are on our website and upcoming events, which says we've got them in various farmers markets all over New York City, and this year out in Shelter Island.
Great. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. This has been so great and informative, and the work you're doing is is, you know, fulfilling my passion. So keep it up. That's great. I'm so happy to see you doing that and, you know, changing the way kids are eating and changing the way families are thinking about food.
Thank you so much, Bhavani. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Everybody out there, you've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network and my guest Lynn Fredericks from Family Cook Productions. Thanks so much for joining us and have a great rest of the day. Bye-bye. Yeah.